Are you recording this, you cheeky...
What? No hashtags found on Instagram. That's not possible.
Just click on one of his hashtags. There's plenty.
Lots of booth selfies. Oh, here's one where you see pretty much everything.
I like a good inspirational quote. Positive mind, positive vibes, positive life. Hashtag terp life.
They're so cheesy, get out.
Actually, your video reminded me of a joke. You know how, like, Eskimos are supposed to have 50 words for snow? Well, Glaswegians have 50 words to swear at the rain.
Wah, wah, wah.
Where do you come up with that stuff?
Guys, who's doing the introduction today, by the way?
So is Jonathan.
Hashtag, I have no idea. Let's go. Welcome to Troublesome Terps, a podcast about topics that keep interpreters up at night, voted best interpreting podcast at the 2017 Prose Community Choice Awards.
Yay! Woo!
Our troublesome topic today is social media and how interpreters should or should not use them. First of all, however, I would like to introduce our wonderful hosts. First up, we have the Munich munchkin, Alexander Gansmeier. How are you doing over there, shorty?
Really good. I did not see that coming. So
not at all.
Hashtag surprise.
And also with us today, we have the muscle from Brussels, Alexander Drexel. How are you doing?
I'm feeling very strong because I just realized that muscle also sounds like, you know, strong muscle. So I'm feeling very, very good indeed. Thank you.
You know, when people listen to this, they won't realize that there's no C in that.
Exactly.
And I am apparently the bruh from Embra. I am Jonathan Downey and I'm doing very well today. We have a special guest today. A man who's taught interpreters so much about social media with his colleagues in the space of one video. I found this unbelievably funny and unbelievably informative. Welcome to the show, Hugo Menendez.
Hello, nice to be with you guys. Thank you for having me. From all the way from London.
Indeed. So we have two guests from the UK today, which is a first, I think.
Yeah, that is a first.
Yeah, because interpreters are actually a protected species in the UK. We're so rare. The lesser spotted interpreter.
Indeed. Jonathan, why don't you tell us a little bit more about that video?
That video is part of the hashtag 1NT Hush initiative, which I must say, anyone who's trying to get interpreters to be quiet has my massive admiration.
Indeed, it's not a hashtag, but a hush tag.
Oh, nice one. Very nice.
Clever boy, yeah.
I'm losing out on the dad jokes here.
So Hugo, after this really tremendous joke, why don't you tell us a little bit about yourself first?
Well, I am a student at the London Met, the Conference Interpreting Masters. I'm in my late 30s, and before I became an interpreter, I was a professional musician. And at some point, it kind of ran out, and I thought, well, I need to find a plan B. What can I do? And it turns out my English wasn't too shabby, and I have Spanish and I have French. So I thought, well, yes, you know, I think I could do this. And so I went into public service interpreting. And after a while, I had a couple of high-profile cases, and I felt as though I had reached the zenith of that profession, and I felt like I needed a new challenge. And then one day outside of court, I met this Arabic interpreter who told me about the whole conference interpreting thing, even though I already kind of knew it's the holy grail for interpreters, isn't it? And she told me about the masters at the Met, and I thought, well, why not apply? So I sort of did it, not really kind of thinking much of it. And next thing I knew it, I had an interview and I was accepted, and I was like, well, I guess we're going to have to do this. So here I am. You know, I have two modules to go.
And is it more or less what you expected from, I mean, the profession, the studies and everything?
Yeah, to be frank, I didn't really even look much into it. I was just like, I just want to do it. I want to do something else. And obviously, I knew what conference interpreting was. I have friends who have been conference interpreters for years. And I just thought, this is something I could see myself doing. And I seem to have a talent for it. And I just thought, this is something that I can see myself doing into my old age.
Great. Yeah.
Nice to see conference interpreting being seen as a desperation profession. One of the things that really struck me about that video is it's interesting that you say you came from music and then from public service interpreting, because it does have a slight public service interpreter flair to it, just in the way that you deal with issues and the way that you approach things. Do you think your previous life as a public service interpreter informed the way you approached the video and even the need that you saw for it?
No, but there is definitely a sense of showmanship when it comes to interpreting. And when it comes to being a public service interpreter, there's definitely one, because a lot of the times you're just there with the witness in the witness box, interpreting to a jury, interpreting to a whole room. So you need to be aware of yourself and be presentable and be able to cope with those situations. So I guess the kind of being on stage background did help for that. I don't know.
Yeah, I can see that.
It's interesting because, I mean, two things jumped out of that. One is, traditionally, I've heard interpreters talk about conference interpreting being slightly more showman than public service, but it's good to hear someone seeing it the other way. And I've also, I don't know about the two Alexes, but I've traditionally heard public service interpreters be, certainly younger ones, be stricter with things like confidentiality and have more... a more black and white picture than conference interpreters have, certainly in our generation. It depends your background, I think. And it was actually interesting to have someone just give us do's and don'ts.
Yeah, well, actually, I think it depends on who you trained with, to be honest. I had a really good tutor. I'm very strict. I've done some really interesting and high-profile cases that I will not talk about to people. And I see them sometimes in the papers, and I'm like, I wish I could just tell everyone about this, but yeah, it's not going on my Facebook wall. Just put it that way.
Hashtag probably not guilty.
Exactly. <Yeah. laughs> So before we dive deeper into the actual topic of social media, I just wanted to ask you real quickly about the process and how the video came to be, because there's two of you in the videos, you and Roman. So maybe tell us a little bit about the team behind the video, how you came up with the idea and all of that.
And who helped you? Because it looked really, like, really professionally made.
Yes.
Yeah. Thank you. The video came about. It was part of a. There's this module in the course called Tools for the Interpreter's Professional Environment, and we had to look for a case that we would find. What we would find as professional interpreters, we would find trouble with, and would have to address. So. We had a few things on the table, but when it came to it, and when we found this issue of conference interpreting and the use of social media, and we started doing some research, we found some really appalling cases. So we thought, we need to do this. And the video was the way we presented it. We felt like we wanted to kind of launch a campaign to kind of as though a cherry on top. And I thought this would be great. So we had this series of questions, and this that you guys actually were kind enough to retweet for us, those questionnaires. And then when it came to it, we just thought, well, we have all these results. What do we do with them? And I have experience with making videos. When I was in the band, we were directing videos. So we thought, yeah, let's do a do's and don'ts video. I borrowed some lights from a friend who works for Sony Music, making videos for bands like Kasabian and whatnot. And so I borrowed those lights and I shot it with my iPhone. You know, there's nothing to it. It looks good though, doesn't it?
It does really look good. You picked a very impressive scenery in the background.
I know, that's the roof of the uni. Yeah.
So did you have any official support from the department or the university?
No. We actually had to sneak into that roof. Actually, we weren't allowed to be there, but I thought it looks too good. It needs to be there. Yeah.
So any trouble afterwards, now that they saw that you were on there, definitely on there?
They still don't know.
Well, they will now.
Yeah.
They're not on YouTube much.
No, I guess not. But I think they liked it.
I think that this is the thing, is that rules are meant to be bent at the right occasion.
That's definitely true.
I agree. Especially when you find the perfect shot, you know, and we had the gherking there. It's a shame it wasn't sunny that day.
Yeah.
Because it would have been for a really good joke for introducing the video. It's like, welcome from sunny London, you know.
It's like sunny Brussels.
Thank you for laughing.
Or like saying welcome to friendly London, which is another oxymoron you could have used.
Indeed.
This is turning into something else. But so, Hugo, what's the response been to the video?
He's not allowed to tell us, it's confidential.
I haven't been peddling it, to be honest. I want it to be very organic. I want people to discover it. So I haven't really, what this video has given me is a sort of raison d'être for my Twitter persona. So anything that any kind of quirky things that I can think about that go with that hashtag, 1NT Hush, I kind of tweet. And so it's kind of creating some sort of base for it. And when people will discover it, hopefully, you know, then they can go into it and go like, oh, so that's that. So that's where I'm coming from. I don't want to, you know, I think it's best if people discover things, you know, then they feel like they own it rather than. Then you just kind of going like, oh, look at this, look at that, you know.
We really should have thought about that with the podcast.
Well, people can always discover the link in our show notes, so they feel like they've discovered it still. So there you go.
There aren't that many videos, though. Sorry to interrupt. There aren't that many videos with conference interpreting when you type them. And a lot of them have issues with audio, or they don't look too great. I mean, well, you have Lourdes de Rioja, who does a great job with them.
Yeah.
But apart from that, you know, there aren't that many kind of student videos that...
This is where I almost wanted to flip the conversation, because on the one hand we have issues with confidentiality, and then on the other hand we have the equally difficult issue of the visibility of interpreting itself. And so kind of maybe we should talk through the confidentiality issues first, but I do want us to remember that I think up until, in fact, even now when I talk to people about what I do for a living, the most common question I get is, what is one of those? And it's like, okay. And then when I explain what I do, the next most common question is, and you get paid for that? It's like, well, yes.
I don't know. What I have to always explain is the difference between a translator and an interpreter. But what I always say is that it's what they do at the UN. And then they always get it. They go, oh, yeah, okay.
Oh, great. Yeah. Hang on, before we dive in too deep, I want to do a real quick round robin, just the four of us, and maybe we quickly say what our, I don't know, maybe not necessarily favorite social media are or social networks are, but the social networks that we use and whether we use them for mostly private purposes, professional purposes, or mixed purposes. Just a real quick...
You really want to out us, don't you?
Well, you don't have to give away your handle if you don't want to, but I thought it would be kind of a nice, you know, starter to the topic if we just do a real quick, you know, round robin. Maybe starting with you, Alex.
All right. Well, so I'm on Facebook, I'm on Twitter, I'm on LinkedIn, I'm on Xing, I'm on Instagram, I'm on... Well, I'm not on Snapchat because, quite frankly, I don't get it, and I think it's kind of stupid. But that's probably because I don't get it.
We're too old.
I think we're too old.
It's
pretty sad.
But I think you have to explain what Xing is to the people who don't live in Germany or any adjacent regions.
That's very true.
It's the noise made when Germans flash their teeth at you. Xing.
Yeah, because we're so known for smiling, aren't we? No, but Xing is basically a German, kind of a German version of LinkedIn. Except that it's green and not blue and much more serious and much more professional, I would say.
Is it? Yeah, maybe.
I don't really use that one, though. That's kind of the one that I don't use. But after this weekend's barcamp that Alex and I attended, I feel like I really should, because it's apparently really great to get clients. So let's see how that goes.
And what about separating the private from the professional?
I try to do that. I have a private Facebook, I have a professional Facebook, and I actually have a Facebook page, so you can like me if you want to. And I don't really post anything professional on my private, and I have that, I think I have that closed off to the public. It was at some point. Maybe
we don't encourage anyone to try that out.
Yeah, don't try it out. I only use my Twitter professionally, even though there's some, like, you know, some personal stuff in there, like political ideas that I retweet. So that stuff is kind of personal and it kind of creeps into my Twitter. But besides that, it's for professional purposes, kind of like networking or retweeting interesting articles. Also, I've started doing interpreting memes, which I find really funny. I hope someone else out there finds them really funny too.
Oh, great. I'm going to look for them. I love a meme.
We also have a troublesome terms Tumblr, which is full of memes, and I added 4 to a few days ago.
Oh, there you go.
So we actually have some content.
So hashtag terp memes. Well, obviously, LinkedIn and Xing, they are purely professional. Like, that's the whole purpose of them. And my Instagram is purely private. So there you go.
Good.
Nice. What about you, Jonathan?
I am on Twitter. I have a personal stroke research account and a professional account, and I still get slightly annoyed when people tweet the wrong one.
That keeps happening to me, FYI, because I never know which one is which.
Yeah. So the one with my actual name is about personal stuff and research stuff and bits of preaching. The one with my business name is all professional stuff. And that professional one, I'm now aiming at clients more than at other interpreters. So please don't get upset if I don't follow you back. I'm trying to trying to go as much as I can towards following clients. I have a personal Facebook, which is mostly closed off, but I now have a Facebook page as I've started bringing out online courses. And there might be a Facebook business page for interpreting at some point in the future. And I use LinkedIn to LinkedIn stalk potential clients and try to get in contact with them. which is actually, to be honest, what LinkedIn is supposed to be used for. It does surprise me the number of translators and interpreters who put loads and loads of stuff on LinkedIn that only other translators and interpreters would be interested in. And it makes me think, have you not really thought of the potential of this? And this is a wider conversation that I was having at a business bootcamp with a business coach recently, that each social media platform has its own audience and its own pluses and minuses, and it's not worth using them badly. So if you're just using LinkedIn to impress other interpreters, you're kind of missing the point.
Yeah, I think that's a very good point. Yeah, but we can maybe keep it or make note of that for later. Yeah. Hugo, you said that you're sort of starting using Twitter for your campaign as well. Then you're obviously on YouTube because that's where the video is. Anything else that you're using?
Yeah. So I have, for my private stuff, I even have a different name for myself. When the whole internet thing started in 96, I adopted this name for a different surname. So I've been using all my social media outlets. They had that name, and I can still have that for my Facebook and Instagram. So that's private stuff, and for professional outlets, I use Twitter and LinkedIn. Not only for the Intosh, but for, you know, other. I'm into arts. I'm into football. I try not to, you know, everything is very kind of contained. I try not to be too out there. You know, very professional.
And I think sometimes it can be difficult to sort of, I don't know, make the difference between the two, or trying to look professional, but then also you have, maybe, you know, as you said, private interests like football, and maybe you want to vent about, you know, something that was going on during the last match, or, you know, a stupid transfer that you don't agree with, or that kind of thing. So
I try to just, you know, it's a matter of having good taste when you post on those, you know, and I try to kind of actually do that in everything. But when it comes to the professional ones, you really, that is your image. That's what people are going to see when they look for you. So.
Although I do kind of think that posting personal stuff on a professional account is less bad than posting professional stuff on a personal account. Because, you know, if you're on your professional account and you post, oh my God, Arsenal London lost, like what a tragedy or whatever, that's going to give you kind of like, you know, that's going to add to your online character, your online persona, even the professional one. So I don't think that's that bad, but if you post your confidential meeting documents on your, you know, private Instagram, that's pretty horrific.
Yeah, you're a Muppet.
You're a Muppet. The thing, though, is that it's actually becoming trickier because one of the things we talked about at the boot camp was the fact that people buy people rather than buying a company. And so when it comes to interpreting, there is a need to show some kind of humanity in what we put professionally. But on the other hand, we don't want to become unprofessional. And I mean, there's a question, do we even know what professional means? But that's a whole other thing. So there is this difficult thing between being human and approachable on social media and being a Muppet. And there must be a line somewhere.
I mean, it's a matter of having good taste, I reckon, you know, and that's not an easy thing to have. I'd like to think I do have good taste, but you never know, you know. So a sense of, you know, a sense of an aesthetic, even, you know. Even for, so for everything that you post, there's a certain nuance, a certain approach that, you know, if you do it well, you know. You know, I don't know if you're even getting me what I'm saying, but that's the way I feel. That.
I was just going to say that, I mean, taste is very hard to define, but I happen to completely agree with you. I think it's part of, you know, it's part personality, it's part taste, it's part respect and just, you know, respecting other people and other people's opinions, especially on social media. I think it's kind of a case where, you know, when you see it, you know, you know, another rule of thumb often is if you're not sure or you're in doubt or you think maybe it's not a good idea, well, just don't post it, you know, just don't do it.
Exactly. That's one of my favorite things. Like, if you're not sure about it, it's not a good idea. If you have to think about it, it's a bad idea. Don't do it.
Well, I think also there's this thing of are you willing for the thing that you're posting to lose your clients? So I know some people who deliberately put some political stuff on their professional social media simply because they actually want to drive away a certain kind of client.
Really?
But I can actually see the point in that because, for instance, there are certain clients that I wouldn't work for, and so if I'm posting, I don't know, something that shows that I have compassion for migrants, for example, I know there are certain clients that wouldn't work with me, but stuff the lot of you, to be honest. If you're racist, I don't want to work with you, but I wouldn't go as far as some of my other colleagues have gone. So it's a balance. It's the, you know, there are certain topics where I'm happy to lose a client over it, like being kind and compassionate to migrants. There are other topics when it's like, you know what, my clients might think something different to me, so let's just leave it. And you have to choose that very, very carefully.
But how do you know that you don't want to work with a client? I mean, there's, you know, companies who make weapons, that kind of thing, but do you know from their social media profiles? Or, I mean, how would you... That's a kind of a difficult call, you know?
It's more putting it the way that one of my translation colleagues put it recently when she said that she was happy posting things about a certain cause because she didn't want to work with people who were against that anyway. So she was actually specialising in this cause. So it's not so much, you know, I do have a list of, you know, we were invited during university to write a list of clients that we would refuse to work with. And I have a vague one in my head. But there are certain causes that if I saw an event, you know, if I saw an event on white supremacy, I would just say no.
Oh, yeah. Okay. Well, that's pretty obvious. Yeah.
Yeah. So yeah. So things like that, I think, are possibly where you have to think about the political message of what you're saying and the fact that there are some clients who might not want to work with you because of that. Are you happy to lose that client type? Or would you rather go, maybe I won't? It's a difficult call.
Yeah, or not. Maybe it's not difficult. I mean, I'm totally getting what you're saying. And yeah, you put yourself out there and yeah, you put your foot down. I totally agree.
But I think in that instance, and I also completely agree, and I actually do that, you know, on Twitter, sometimes I do repost or retweet certain political things. Like, for example, I'm very outspoken about my dislike for Nazis. So I feel like that's a very appropriate thing to even put on a professional account if it comes up on my Twitter feed. And yeah, those are the kinds of things where I feel like you're kind of taking a stand, and that's fine, even in that context.
Is it a good idea to address colleagues, other people about things that, you know, may seem unprofessional? Should we, I'm not going to say police them, but you know, say, is it, do you think it's a good idea to share that?
That's a tricky one.
Hugo, you're the expert.
I mean, I've never done it before. I think, or maybe once or twice, you know. I mean, I've definitely seen posts from other people who are in the interpreting profession, let's just put it like that. And I said, why did you post this? This is just so stupid. And then I just make like a snarky comment or something like that. I don't know if that's a good idea. What do you think?
I think people have to realize this by themselves. So, you know, it's a hard one. But again, it comes to that question of having that good taste and that sense of, you know, awareness, really, of what you're doing. The best thing we can do is to start a conversation. So that's why I'm really excited about the whole Intosh initiative, because maybe this guy, I mean, the target audience for this is students, but maybe other interpreters will come to that video and they'll go like, oh, blimey, I've been posting hashtag view from the booth, you know, since 2015.
Yeah.
I would say I was taught a principle when I was young that you always compliment in public and correct in private. And I try as much as I can to live by that. Now, there are times when I've seen people asking me to retweet things and I've thought, you know what? No, I don't think I will, because I don't agree with that. And that's, unless someone's going to go through and say, why didn't Jonathan retweet that? That's a kind of passive way of dealing with it. And there's a couple of interpreting blogs that I just don't read because I don't agree with either their content or the way they approach things. But I don't need to go in public and go, haha, everyone, this blog's rubbish. That's not clever. That's the rule that I go to. And I have occasionally sent DMs or Facebook private messages to people and gone, you might want to think that through, but I always would do that in private. I've never seen someone being corrected in public and it going well. So if it's not going to go well, why do it?
It's right. But did you know these people that you were DMing then? So the funny thing is that you might see an interpreter that's doing some bizarre. So say they're in the booth and they're interpreting and they suddenly they're recording themselves and they post a video of themselves interpreting in the booth.
Ooh.
Which there are.
Yeah.
You know? And maybe in their heads, that's phenomenal. It's like, wow, I'm so cool. You know, and I'm getting so many likes. But
to be honest, the last one of them I saw was from a practice camp. So I thought, yeah, no big deal.
Yeah, no, exactly. I mean, I was posting photos from our mock conferences back in March. And that's fine because they're mock conferences, but we're talking actual events.
If I knew who they were, like if it was one of the Alexes, I would send them a virtual slap.
You're allowed to.
Much appreciated.
But if it's someone... See, this is the thing, and this is where experience matters and reputation matters. Whether the Alexes and I like it or not, we're building a reputation in the industry. And we can probably get away with saying things to people in private that some newer interpreters can't. And I think we're going to rely on the people who've built a reputation to put that reputation on the line and just quietly have a word in people's ear and say, that's not cool.
I think that's an excellent point, and I wanted to put the question out there anyway. I'm wondering whether there's a sort of an age difference in here. Now, Hugo, you said you came into studying interpreting a bit later on, shall we say? And Alex, for example, you work in associations. So, do you see a difference there between, you know, different generations of interpreters? Is the younger generation sort of more into social media? Is it more difficult for them to sort of tone it down, maybe, or hold things back? Or I don't know. I find that an interesting question.
Yeah, that is an interesting question.
Yeah, this question actually takes me to something that, you know, actually older generations are not so aware of themselves and what they post on social media.
Mm-hmm.
You know, they and I find that so bizarre. You know. And so you see some real, you know, Muppets, shall we use the word again? You know.
Yes.
You know, well into their 40s, 50s, you know, and it's like, mate, you know, what are you doing? You know, it's, you know, this is you. This is your persona. You're putting yourself out there. And I don't know, it's just, it baffles me. I would think that someone that's grown with the internet and who's grown with social media has a sense of awareness of you know, what to put it. It's as though they use their... They've had formative years, and so when it comes to it, they'll know, you know, what's what's best, what's not. But someone that just kind of jumps into it, then they might go all out. And I don't know that. I don't think that answers your questions, but I just wanted to say that.
Yeah, but I
kind of... Yeah, no, it does. But I mean, is it... Alex, yeah, no, sorry.
I was just going to agree. I think that makes a lot of sense. But the thing is, I'm not sure... I do think that younger generations are more kind of in tune with social media as a whole, but there's also lots of people, especially in the profession, who have never touched any social media. You know, they might have a Facebook to keep in touch with their grandma or whatever, but lots of people have never been on Twitter. And, you know, again, just as we saw in the Barcamp, like, we had to have a whole module for people setting up their own Twitter account because they were just kind of afraid of getting in touch with it.
And they were mostly young interpreters, by the way.
And they were mostly young interpreters, exactly. So... It's kind of strange. I think it's really a very personal thing, because there are also some more experienced interpreters out there who, well, this is going to sound relatively strange, but, you know, just looking at them, you really wouldn't think that they would be so into social media. And then you really find out that they're, you know, a jack of all trades when it comes to posting their stuff in the right channels at the right time to the right people. And it's just great. So I think it's very much a personal thing, even though you would think that younger interpreters would be more into the whole social media thing.
Well, I think it comes back to this idea that the people most likely to be caught in online fraud at the moment are the 40s to 50s age group.
That's interesting.
Yeah, keep going.
Yeah, it used to be the over 60s. Now apparently it's the 40s to 50s. And my suspicion is that it's the people who either came in late, or with social media, the people who are just realizing how amazing it is and how you can talk to so many people at once and haven't heard of things like trolling or fake news. I mean, most of the people in my Facebook feed who post stuff that's garbage and it's obviously fake are not the people our age. And they're not the much older people either. So it's partly a demographic thing, but I think it's also partly the world you were brought up in. So I think we were brought up in a world where we've learned to be suspicious pieces of work, because you have to be online. And so when we post something, there's probably some critical process in our head that goes, is this a really good idea? Or we've got some kind of social media strategy going on. Whereas I think people who are just coming into social media cold aren't aware that people could misuse your Twitter photo to find out what your client's doing, or read your simultaneous interpreting notes and go, oh, they must be working for so-and-so. I mean, seriously, people, if you're posting your notes from the booth online, you're acting like a Muppet.
Oh, yeah. Mm. And you see that a lot, though.
Yeah. But can I just say that I've actually been guilty of posting the hashtag view from the booth kind of thing. And I think most interpreters have done something along those lines. But I don't think I've actually ever posted anything kind of like incriminating or confidential. So I never really post any agendas. I never post, I don't know, a list of delegate names. And actually one time, I had this really big conference with 6,000 delegates. We were sitting in the room and it was just an astonishing view. So I took a picture of the whole like stadium and actually took the time to edit out the company name in the picture, like by hand. So nobody would, you know, so it would just be like a mass of people and that's it. And I felt fine with that. I didn't really want to put out the client's name or anything like that, but I felt like that was okay. But anything more, I really wouldn't have been comfortable with. Your guys are being awfully quiet. I'm feeling like I'm just digging my
no,
hole.
No.
See, that's the thing, is that if Alex D was to do a view from the booth and he's in like the hemicycle, then it kind of gives away what's going on, because someone could go onto the EU website and go, okay, hemicycle, who's on now? Oh, let's listen. That would kind of be dumb. If you're in a really unique venue and you post a view from the booth, that's probably not clever. On the other hand, if you're in a generic conference hall that could be anywhere in the world and you've turned off geotagging, you're probably okay. On the other hand, most of the interpreting jobs I've done, we've been too busy for me to take a photo. So, you know, what are you doing? What's your booth mate doing? How have you got time? Is one of my questions on a lot of jobs, because I rarely get time. I would love to do an action shot or even a shot that looks like an action shot, but we just never get time.
That's a good point, yeah.
But some people do. You just have to go on Instagram and look up hashtag conference interpreting. Yeah, there's plenty of it. Well, not plenty, but there are some.
There's like some 600 odd photos that are hashtag conference interpreting, which is quite a lot considering it's Instagram. And there is no one out there telling me that their Instagram is a professional. You know, it's a professional thing. Like, that's not a thing.
No, that's well, unless you're an Instagram influencer or something like that.
We should obviously.
But I don't know any interpreters who do that on the side. Yeah. But speaking of hashtags, I was wondering about a different thing, because very often now, bigger events, conferences have their own hashtag, of course. So people can have an online conversation. What do you think? What's your feeling about joining in those conversations? You know, maybe sharing a few things here and there, using that hashtag, and maybe engaging with other participants of the conference. Because I'll admit, I have done that in very small doses, you know, just sharing an interesting thought from a speaker when I was not on my shift, for example. How do you feel about that?
I loved it, actually. I think in that COPD that we met for the CIOL, they were using one, and it's phenomenal. You can follow then you can actually network. You're interacting with the people that are at the conference.
But wait, I think maybe I misunderstood, but I thought Alex was talking about using a hashtag from a conference where he was interpreting. Or did I?
Yeah. That's correct. Yeah, no, that's correct. I mean, of course, it makes total sense for conferences related to our profession. But no, I was actually talking about events that we're working at and that are, I don't know, about marketing or whatever.
I would. There's two things going on here. One, if I remember rightly, the event that you tweeted from was about interpreting, which is kind of different.
Yeah, exactly.
But I think 9 times out of 10, I'm interpreting at events that I wouldn't normally be at unless I was an interpreter. And the events that I tend to tweet from tend to be the ones that I'm going for work or research reasons. So there's kind of an easy split for me. I would say I would tweet something, but in such a way that it wouldn't be obvious that I was interpreting it. So, for instance, there was an event and I have to be totally anonymized here. There was an event I interpreted at some point during the last 18 months, shall we say, that they were live tweeting from the event. And when I got home and I was no longer in the booth, I actually saw, funnily enough, something that I had interpreted into English, which they had tweeted.
Oh. So
I retweeted that, but I didn't tell people they'd actually got the wording slightly wrong. But, I retweeted it anyway, but no one would know that I'm retweeting that because I was the interpreter and they missed out the word there or whatever. They just think I'm retweeting that because it's a cool quote and I'm promoting the event. So I would say probably don't do it in such a way that's obvious that you're in the privileged position of being in the booth. And certainly don't, you know, respond to someone's tweets about the event going, don't be an idiot, that's not what he said. You don't want to do that.
But, you know, I actually find that posting about events after they are finished is less critical. So, Alex, for example, if you're working at the conference that has to do about marketing and they have a fantastic hashtag and you really agree with what the guy said, you can still tweet about that hashtag or tweet about the conference using that hashtag when you're home. Because then, you know, you might as well just be some guy who found the hashtag on Twitter and thought it was really interesting. And now you're tweeting because you read up on the tweets. So I think that's a lot less critical than if you were live tweeting about what is currently going on about the conference using the conference hashtag. Because then people will obviously make the connection that you're there and they will probably find out that you're an interpreter relatively quickly. And, you know,
okay, just to play the devil's advocate here, what's the big deal if they find out that I'm an interpreter?
Here you go.
Well, you'd be in breach of the confidentiality and the code of conduct, wouldn't you? I mean, I just wouldn't do it. I've never done it because this is how I was brought up, so to speak, as an interpreter. So I have never even kind of question what I would do because or what would happen to me because it's just something so obvious.
You know, I find it actually quite strange that people would do that. I mean, in that instance when I posted the picture of that big stadium, I didn't only want to edit out the name of the company for the company's sake and for confidentiality reasons, but I also don't really want to know the whole world what my client is or who my client is. And it might be different for people working for agencies because it's not their client, but then it's the agency's client, and you've definitely signed an NDA with the agency, so I'm pretty sure they wouldn't be okay with you blasting out their clients to the world. So I never really get why people would do that just for economic reasons, you know? Either you lose the client because, you know, I posted and then Jonathan snatches up my client because he thinks, oh, look at this huge conference, I can do that too. Or the agency sees it and sues you. So I never really understood why you would put your clients out there by name or put the conference like agenda with the specific title and everything else out there. It just makes no sense to me. And I'm hoping that people are not going to go through my old tweets and find that I've done that. I don't think I've done that.
I think that there's a couple of things going on. There's the economic reason, which the counterpoint to that is I recently saw one of my colleagues post a photo with the person who organized the event. And basically the way that happened is it seemed like the person who organized the event was so pleased with their interpreting, they were wanting to say, look at what a great interpreter they are. And then the economic case doesn't make sense because the client said, let's do a selfie. In which case, you're like, yeah, sure, fine. I think the trickier argument is actually that when you're posting the event that you're at, one, it's an egotistical thing. Let's be honest.
Yep.
And two,
that applies to all of social media in a way, doesn't it?
Not necessarily, if you do it right. But I think the other point is that if you're saying, you know, look at me at this event, then you're making the event about you. And it's not. It's about the client. And actually, making it obvious that you were the interpreter at that event, and some events have got safety issues. There's a couple of kind of lower-lying background issues that I don't think we've talked about in the profession as much. And also things like people could say, well, hold on, such and such a company's having a meeting, let's go and look them up. And they could guess stuff and work stuff out that they really shouldn't know. I mean, to be honest, a lot of companies will put their paperwork on a public server, but how many people are going to read it? You know, it's thinking about the security of your client. And even if they've put stuff on a public server, you don't want to flag up to the world, look, their 1995 financial results are on a server somewhere. Don't really want to be doing that.
But I mean, if there are some guidance out there, obviously, for the use of social media. And I think the most, Hugo, you said that it's being taught or that teachers talk about it at university, but there's some sort of, there's an official document out there. I think there's some material from AIC as well, but the one that I'm referring to is from the so-called HINTS group, which is a grouping of heads of interpreting services worldwide. It's a rather short document and it's already 6 years old. So it's from October 2011. Could, you know, need an update maybe, I don't know. But the main point I think that I find in here is that it's mainly referring to avoiding sharing negative professional experiences. So just to continue the sort of devil's advocate's position, what's wrong with sharing something positive? Because the negative kind of goes, you know, that's kind of obvious. You don't diss your client, you don't diss the event, or you don't say anything negative about that on social media. And then that's truly obvious.
I always remember what my tutor saying that he'd had this job in a police station, whatever. And so he was interpreting for some witness. And after the interview, the policeman said, so how did you think it went, the interview? And my tutor would say, well, I wasn't there. You had the interview with the witness. I wasn't there. I was just interpreting. And that I wasn't there is what you really should be aiming for. You know, if you want to post something online, then you be creative. That's what I'm inviting people to do. Just find a way to post something about what you just did that is okay, creative, and that's going to touch that, but in a very lateral sort of way, let's say that. And there's ways of doing it. And, you know, if you follow that hashtag, that Enthash, you will. I've been just thinking of examples, and I've been just posting them out there. And it's a way of getting the profession out there in a way that's harmless to your client's best interest, and, you know, your own best interest, really, of, you know, harming yourself and, you know, your potential professional life.
I would come at it from a different angle because I'm a known critic of the I wasn't there argument. It's actually something I've spent the last...
I could hear you take a deep breath there, Jonathan.
Yeah. Hugo, there's a book you really should read. I have a book out in the first chapter I was talking about that. I think there's a... On the one hand, I get the argument of, and I do agree with the fact that the client should always feel that it was their event and their event went well. It shouldn't be the interpreters are so amazing. There's one problem with posting positive things. If you post, for instance, I had such a great negotiation with so-and-so, so great to help them seal the deal. One, that's an obvious breach of confidentiality. Arguably, it's good for the profession, but anyway. But, you know, it's a massive breach of confidentiality, and you've just given their competitors wind that they've just done a big deal. That's really not good. If they give you permission and say, I want to tell the world how great a job you did, then please do let them. But again, they'll know how much they're comfortable sharing, and let them be the ones taking the selfie, not you. But what I would be quite happy to do is if you're working with an AV company who do a great job and who you know have 3 or 4 events at a time, if they're happy with it, talk to the sound tech and by all means say, another great day of interpreting, fantastic to work with so-and-so again. You can share positives in a way that's not going to give your client's competitors a whiff, oh, they're up to something. Or you can even just say, a great interpreting day. I was asking people not so long ago to share stories of where interpreting had made a difference, and I made it very clear, you need to anonymise them. And even people just saying, you know, did a police interview help someone make their case? Did a police interview help the interview go well? That's good stuff. Or I had one last year, you know, interpreted for... months after I said, you know, recently interpreted for a company, helped them seal a big deal. That's nice and generic, but it's still giving the visibility image to clients that says, interpreting's really good, you should use this, we're worth the money. I think it's, you know, you can post the positives, don't post it on the day of the event, wait a little while, and post something generically positive that clients will go, oh, I want to be like that.
Yeah, I kind of agree. I mean, in a way, yeah. That is kind of what I was saying with being creative. Like that example about talking with the AV team. I mean, that's a way of doing things, you know, sort of in that sort of creative sort of vein, really, right?
Yeah.
Which I love that actually, by the way, because I'm all into audiovisual and, you know, as a music producer, you know, I'm really into all that.
You have better conversations with the sound guys when you tell that when you show your knowledge of the gear.
Indeed, presser and talking about the dynamics and the reverb and the channels and whatnot.
I had the sound guy turn up without bringing pop filters, and I'm like, really? You don't come to my jobs without a pop filter. He just like, do I need one? Yeah.
Usually an old sock.
Yeah, over his head.
Since we were talking about creativity there, the question to all of us, can we think of creative social media posts that where we would think, you know, or where we would say that was a good one? I mean, we don't have to be specific, just, you know, in terms of general ideas. Could be one of your own ones or something you've seen on social media.
Well, I like my memes.
Yeah,
I basically memes because I find them funny, and I'm pretty much all about entertaining myself, and then I'm just posting them in the hopes that someone else will.
So we're talking funny images, animated GIFs, that kind of thing. Yeah.
Yeah, I think it's always, you know, especially on Twitter, either you have something really interesting to say or you have something funny to say. If it's not one of the two, then why even bother, you know?
That's a good point. Yeah.
A lot of people will go like, oh my God, had a horrible job today. Speaker was way too fast, whatever.
Really?
You can say that if you make it really funny, you know, if you just like bring some levity into it or put like a funny image with it and it's kind of like you're hit by a truck or whatever, you know, you can still do that, but don't make it sound like your life is ending and the client was doing you a horrible disfavor by inviting you to the conference and paying you a proper fee for interpreting and then they dare speak fast. You know, that's just kind of cheeky in that way.
the one of the most popular posts on my blog is a post called This Is It. And basically what I did, and I'm doing it again because I just fancied doing it again, was in the week up to, with that one, it was a scarily technical interpreting job. And in the week up to it, I just blogged about the process of preparation. I didn't tell anyone who the job was or the fact that it was scarily technical. I just blogged about the stages that you go through in preparation, especially when, as I had to that week, I couldn't do it all in one lump. I was having to space it out through other jobs. And the last post before the event was called This Is It, and was talking about that feeling that you have the night before a job. And that went crazy. And it wasn't just,
I remember that,
just interpreters retweeting it. I had like potential client retweeting as well. And people sending me feedback going, I didn't know. Someone actually sent me a message, I didn't realize interpreters cared so much. And I thought, hold on a minute. Now, I mean, that comes back to the invisibility, we're just conduits thing. But showing clients that there's a human in the booth and this is what it feels like. And then when I got home, I interpreted the emotions of finishing a job. And now with that job, the main emotion was, oh my goodness, I don't even know if I can see, I'm so tired, which doesn't usually happen to me in the booth. But that insight into this is what life is like when you're preparing for a job, I expected student interpreters to go, wow. I didn't expect clients to go, you care? It's like, yeah, of course I do.
Who would have thunk? Yeah,
but this is the barrier that we have to break, and we should be breaking in our social media. There are clients, the potential clients should not be seeing that we're working with Coca-Cola or Schweppes or whoever, but they should be seeing people who actually care about the event working. And that's a point I made on today's blog post, by the way. But you know, but that kind of social media is so useful for the profession. That it will raise awareness and stop this nonsense of you're going to be replaced by Google. It's like, ha ha ha, no.
But I think that's what I was trying to get at earlier, maybe a bit clumsily, I don't know. But when I was talking about, you know, joining the conversation around a hashtag for a conference, for example, because I was not talking about, you know, making it about the interpreters or, you know, how great we were doing, but, you know, really just honestly joining the conversation. I think that, and it seemed that that's what you're saying as well, Jonathan.
Not so much joining the event conversation as joining as showing people that it's not, a job is not just another job for us. I now, as a consultant interpreter, I watch very carefully for how interpreters approach their work. And one of my criteria is if I can see that they're going to interpreting jobs and just treating it as another job that I don't particularly care about, then that's going to make me less likely to hire them, to be honest. I want the clients to see and to understand that we care.
Definitely. I agree with Jonathan. You had a Jerry Maguire moment there.
Jerry Maguire?
Jerry Maguire. Show me the money! You haven't seen that film?
No.
Tom Cruise, Cuba Gooding Jr.?
I think it's too American for our little Scott.
The Shawnee. Our entire film collection consists of U's, film rated U and UC. So if it doesn't have some sort of animated anime on it, I probably haven't seen it in the past 10 years.
Oh, it's a wicked film. It's great. Well, it's about, you know, by you opening yourself up to in your Twitter and in that blog, you know, you realize the human connection, and that's what people seek out, right? Yeah.
So if we sort of wrap this whole thing up by sort of looking for best practice, or call it, you know, good ideas or creativity or whatever, I don't know, Hugo, if you, I mean, during the preparation of the video, if you've come across anything that you thought, oh, you know, that's good advice, that's something we'll put in the video. And of course, people should watch the video because there are do's and don'ts in there. But I'm just wondering if there's anything that you've sort of stumbled upon while preparing the whole thing that we could wrap this episode up with.
Just off the top of my head, I can't really, because it's really virgin territory, really, isn't it?
It is, yeah.
That's why I'm just opening the door to it. I just want it to be a conversation. I mean, even the actual video, it has some bits that aren't great, you know. So I'm just I just want to be a part of it. And you know, if these is my 2 cents or my two pence, then I'm happy with that. Yeah. I'm here to join. You know.
And I suppose you would be happy to see people using the, you know, 1NT hashtag to sort of, take a different spin on what they post about their work and how they, you know, share stuff on social media.
Yeah, I mean, because that, I guess that would mean that it's serving a purpose and that they're aware of the issue. I mean, that would be hysterical, actually. I'd love a good meme with that in.
So that's a call to action there.
Let me see what I can do.
Yeah, but again, with no sort of grand plan behind it, because that's not kind of who I am. I just want to be added value.
Very nice.
Added value. Funnily enough, that's in the book.
Also, go buy Jonathan's book.
It's okay, we'll edit that out. I would actually like to see someone rise to the challenge and have a tweet which both is compatible with 1NT hush and with the hashtag visible 1NT, which is talking about
being
more visible. I think the challenge for interpreters is, can we use social media in a way that foregrounds the power of what we do and foregrounds the value that we add, without making it all about us or without breaching confidentiality? And I think there is a sweet spot somewhere. So maybe we don't need view from the booth, or maybe we need to turn view from the booth into our views on something. I'm amazed how many business people were really pleased to hear my views on public speaking as an interpreter. It's like, interpreters care about public speaking? It's like, yeah. And that becomes something that we can say. But what can we do to raise the visibility of interpreting and still be compatible with 1NT hush?
I like me a good challenge.
So the kids coming from behind. It's up to them.
Do you tackle at an Arsenal match? That does. Red card.
It's from an LCD sound system song. Yeah. But it's true. It's down to the students who are going to be doing, posting stuff online. You know?
That's true. Yeah.
Exactly. It's the next generation. There you go.
Yeah, we're totally abdicating any responsibility now and leaving it to the next generation.
Exactly.
Just one good rule of thumb, when in doubt, don't post it.
Or when in doubt, send it to Alexander Gansmeier and he'll post it for you.
Oh my goodness. I'll make it a meme. At least we'll have a good laugh about it.
Yeah, I was just going to say, actually, the good news is that we now can continue the conversation from the episode in the comments for each and every episode, which we now have enabled on our sites, which is troubledherbs.com. So that's a good way to continue the conversation.
And of course, everyone can also find us on Twitter.
Yes. So
if you want to comment on the conversation, or if you have anything else interesting to say, or a topic that you feel like we should cover in a future episode, let us know.
Yes, we still haven't solved any of the topics that we've covered.
Yeah.
So, we've got a little bit of a while to go. And actually, we do happily take, I understand that there are some topics that are difficult for people to suggest under their own name. We're totally happy for anonymous suggestions. If you want to comment with the name anonymous, that's totally fine. Let's deal with the topics that really do keep you up at night and not just children.
Couldn't have said it better. So once again, thanks to Hugo for joining us on the show. We really had a great time discussing another troublesome topic.
Thank you.
That's it for today. Bye bye.
Bye.
Understand anything that went on today?
Why?
And I mean, I'm sorry, but there's no way I would have Instagrammed that conference because I would have had no clue what any of it meant anyway. This thing of meaning-based interpreting works on most jobs. Some jobs are just going, I I think this means something.